spotlights shine up at words on a pedestal. 20th Century Studios. A spotlight shines on an animated man who turns and flees, then transforms into a bird, then takes flight. Caption, 20th Century Studios presents. An exterior view through an apartment window of a man sitting at a desk. Caption, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 1965. He writes in a notepad. He furrows his brow, glances upward, then turns off a radio. He rises, then approaches a wall. Caption, inspired by a true story. Reflected in a TV screen, a shadowy figure appears lifting a body, then dropping it onto a bed. The figure approaches the TV, then turns it on. Dancing young people appear on the screen. Plainclothes detective on a police radio.
We have a possible intruder at Oak Tower Apartments.
61, got it.
The detective drives off. In a corridor, the detective and another man approach the door to an apartment.
State police! Open up!
The detective nods at the other man, who unlocks the door. With his revolver raised, the detective enters the apartment, then steps through the dimly lit rooms. He pauses at a slightly open door, then looks into the room.
State police!
He pushes open the door, then enters. Lying on a bed is the body of a young woman wearing only a bra and panties. Her stockings are tied in a bow around her neck. In a residential neighborhood, a car makes its way along a street. Caption, Boston, 3 years earlier. From the car, the driver and a passenger toss newspapers toward the houses. A dark-haired woman opens the front door of a house, collects the paper, then glances at the headline as she enters a kitchen, where a young boy and a young girl sit at a table eating.
Eat your cereal. How are you?
Toast?
Yeah, that one.
She joins them at the table, then flips through the paper as a dark-haired man enters.
Morning, everybody.
Morning.
Where's Tommy?
Morning, Dad.
Shh. Tommy.
Right here.
Hey, come on. We gotta leave in 2 minutes.
Tommy enters.
You want toast?
Sure.
As she cuts an article entitled, New Suspect in Mail Truck Robbery from the paper, the man kisses the woman on the cheek. From a city street, the woman enters a building, then makes her way through a crowded newsroom. She sets her coat down at a desk, then pins the article she cut from the newspaper to a corkboard beneath the heading, You've Been Scooped. She pins another article entitled, Chelsea Cops Caught Running Numbers to the Board. A dark-haired man approaches her.
Can't let one slide, can you?
Not until they get me off the lifestyle desk.
She turns, then approaches a gray-haired man.
Jack, you got a second?
Not now.
Chelsea cops got caught running numbers again. The Globe and the Herald ran it today. We got nothing.
Come on, don't you have an assignment?
Okay, what about the new suspect in the mail truck robbery? Every other paper covered it.
You see that? That's the crime desk. I got six guys working that beat.
A group of women.
Okay, Susan, you're on must-have housewares.
Thank you.
Mary, you got the fashion and style feature for the Sunday edition, 20-inch feature with photos. Mm-hmm. Ellie, you're on candidates' wives. Mm-hmm. Basic life on the trail stuff, what they're eating, what they're wearing.
Who's yelling at who?
Loretta, you got this week's product review. Sunbeam has a new toaster.
Loretta, the dark-haired woman, takes a box.
Okay, and Nancy, you're on diet.
At a work counter, Loretta puts bread into the toaster, then flips through a newspaper. She brings the paper closer to her face. Her eyes widen. A headline reads, "Woman slain in apartment." At her desk, Loretta opens a drawer, then flips through a stack of clipped articles. She produces an article entitled, "Back Bay Window Strangled," then compares the details with that of the "Woman slain in apartment" article. A woman in a nurse's uniform enters the newsroom. Loretta turns to her dark-haired colleague.
Hi, Phyllis. Who's that?
That is Holland's girl, Jean Cole.
Is she a reporter or a nurse?
She's working undercover. Got some story on nursing homes.
Loretta stares at Jean, who begins to type at a typewriter, then examines the machine. Loretta brings her typewriter to Jean's desk.
Here. Here's mine. I'll fix this one.
Thanks.
As Jean types, Loretta sits at a nearby desk.
What are you working on?
Story on patient abuse.
That sounds important. How'd you get it?
I asked for it.
And they just gave it to you?
It's usually how it works. Not around here, it isn't.
Jean stops and glares at her.
Sorry.
Loretta returns to repairing the typewriter. In a residential neighborhood at night, Loretta carries a bag of groceries along a street, then makes her way up the steps of a townhouse. Inside, an elderly woman smokes a cigarette while watching TV. Nearby, Loretta loads groceries into a refrigerator.
Beautiful Monroe centerpiece.
What the hell is she going to do with those?
Ma, what did the doctor say?
I didn't go.
What do you mean you didn't go?
Katie didn't show up.
What happened? You didn't call her?
I'm not going to go around hounding people. She's not even family.
She's married to your son.
If it was so damn important, you should have taken me yourself.
Yeah, I'm aware.
She kisses her mother.
I'll see you in a couple days. Don't get up. I'll let myself out.
Gotta put the chain on.
Since when?
Since the neighbor got killed. You didn't hear?
No.
Mrs. Slessor's. Right around the corner. It was in your paper.
She hands a newspaper to Loretta, who furrows her brow as she reads. On a city street at night, Loretta stands, staring at an apartment building. She enters the building, proceeds down a corridor, then pauses before a line of police tape across the door of an apartment. She furrows her brow. In the newsroom, Loretta approaches Jack.
Jack, I think I found something.
She hands some articles.
Three women were strangled over the last 2 weeks.
I don't see the interest. These are nobodies.
Who do you think our readers are? And that's just it. Why would anybody go around killing three nobody women?
And how do you plan to find that out?
Let me profile the victims. See if there's any connection.
Kid, you're not covering a homicide.
Why not?
Because you don't have any experience covering homicides.
Well, how am I supposed to get any experience if you won't give me a shot?
No.
Oh, come on. It's slow. I'll do it on my own time.
All right. But you're still on the lifestyle desk.
She nods, then turns and leaves. On a residential street, Loretta approaches an apartment building. A bearded man answers the door.
Loretta McLaughlin with the Record American. You're the super. You found Ida Erga?
Yeah, that's right.
Did it look like someone broke in?
No. No, door was locked. I had to use a master key.
Anything else unusual when you went in?
No, those details don't belong in your paper.
Oh, no, I'm not going to print anything disrespectful. I'm just trying to get a sense.
You really want to know?
She nods.
I found her on the floor, with her legs spread open, ankles strapped to a chair. There was a broom handle stuck between her legs.
Loretta raises her eyes from her notepad.
You mean?
Yeah. He tied her stockings in a bow around her neck.
A bow?
I got a gift.
An exterior view of a police station. Inside, Loretta approaches a uniformed officer at a desk.
You know who's working the Anna Slessor's homicide? I'm with the Record American.
They're out. I've never seen you before.
I was working a different desk. You know when they'll be back?
No clue. They're up to their eyeballs.
Yeah, I bet. Any suspects?
Dr. Corsetti. He already covered it.
I'm doing a different story about how the murders are connected.
You mean the bows?
All three had bows around their necks?
I didn't say that.
Oh, I already confirmed Ida Erga. Are you confirming Blake and Slessor's?
I'm not confirming nothing. I need to take a hike.
In the newsroom, Loretta and Jack.
Only one I can confirm is Ida Erga.
What about the autopsy reports?
DA won't release them.
One of them in Lynn?
Helen Blake.
Now that's Essex County. Different county, different DA. Corsetti, you know the medical examiner in Lynn?
Yeah, I play cards with him.
See if you can get the Helen Blake autopsy.
In a records room, a woman takes a file folder from a cabinet, then sets it on a desk before Loretta.
Thanks.
The woman leaves. Loretta sits at the desk, then stares down at the folder. She opens it. Inside is the photo of a woman's body lying face down on a bed. A second photo shows the body dangling slightly off the bed. Loretta looks at a third photo, then brings a hand to her mouth. The photo displays a pair of stockings tied around the woman's neck. The autopsy report reads, in part, the deceased, Helen Blake, was found face down, legs apart. A nylon stocking was tied tight around her neck and knotted just at the nape in a double-hitched knot. In a notepad, Loretta writes, Helen Blake, double-hitched knot. At the police station, Loretta enters and approaches a group of officers.
What's the one right there?
Excuse me, I'm looking for Officer Dugan.
Dugan? No, he's not here.
You know where he drinks?
You know where Foley's is?
At a pub, Loretta enters, then approaches a uniformed officer drinking at the bar.
Officer Dugan?
Yeah.
Loretta McLaughlin with the Record American. You took the call for Anna Slessor's?
That's right.
I need to ask you a detail about the crime scene.
I don't think I'm supposed to be talking in the papers.
No, it's nothing like that. Just want to ask about the stockings around her neck. Did you see if they were tied in a single or a double hitch knot?
There's no way I could tell by looking. I would have had to roll her over and just a patrolman. I don't touch the bodies.
Did it look decorative?
In a real sick kind of way. Yeah.
Thank you.
Loretta at a payphone.
I just confirmed Slessor's. I've got confirmation on all three.
All right. Get back here and write it up.
In the newsroom, Loretta at a typewriter.
What do these three women have in common? Three shadowy patterns of attack. Three knotted loops that bind them together. Strangers to one another in life. They became sisters in death. Each coming to the same horror-filled moment of murder by strangulation. By a killer who came quietly, was careful in his derangement, and self-possessed enough to lock the door on his way out.
Hey, okay there! Open up!
body of a woman with stockings tied around her neck. A newspaper article reads, "Mad strangler loose." Jack, Loretta, and her dark-haired colleague look at the article being typeset. Her colleague hands her a flask.
Nice work, kid.
She drinks. In her kitchen, Loretta with her husband and children.
The city is buzzing today after a story in the Record American claims that three elderly women were killed by one deranged individual.
Nothing in the Globe. Or the Herald.
He reads a newspaper.
Or any of them. You beat the whole damn city. I can't believe it. This is incredible.
She grins. In his office, Jack with a reporter.
The story's bullshit. Been getting calls all morning from my guys in the department.
DA's office for you.
Hold my calls, please.
She's in way over her head. You never should have sent her out on this.
I have Commissioner McNamara for you.
I told you to hold my calls.
No, he's here for you.
Jesus Christ. Fuck. Send him in.
A balding man in a suit enters.
What can I do for you, Commissioner?
Jack hands him a drink.
Was it your idea to send some skirt down to the station house?
Her name's Loretta. She was working a story.
Is that what you're calling it, though? Hanging around the bar, flirting with my guys. Never even identified herself as a reporter. Now I've got every old lady in the fucking city tying up my phone line.
Just tell me what we got wrong, and I'll print a correction.
It's barstool gossip, for Christ's sake.
Half the news in the city's barstool gossip. What the hell did we get wrong?
Homicide has been working round the clock on this, and we've got nothing to connect the murders.
What about the stockings?
Only one of the victims in Boston had that. The other one looks like a suicide.
We got sources for both women.
Sources? There was a couple of dipshit beat cops trying to bed that girl you sent down.
I'm telling you this as a friend. If you keep running this story, you're going to end up embarrassing yourself.
McNamara rises, then leaves. From her desk, Loretta watches McNamara leave.
Loretta!
The other reporters in the newsroom turn to her. From his office doorway, Jack waves her toward him. She rises from her desk, then makes her way into his office.
Shut the door. I am catching hell over the story. Now, Commissioner McNamara says the whole thing's gossip. Same with Corsetti's sources.
I confirmed every word of that story.
You identified yourself as a reporter.
Of course I did.
Even at the bar.
Especially at the bar.
I'm killing the follow-up.
We beat everyone in the whole damn city, and you're just going to drop it?
Yes, I am.
The story is good.
The story is a headache I don't need right now. And you're back on the lifestyle desk.
She turns and leaves. Outside her house, Loretta pulls up in her car. She steps from the vehicle, makes her way toward the house, then pauses at the front door and listens before entering.
You don't see how selfish it is?
What do you want me to say? We make it work.
Yeah, because I watch your kids half the week.
I very much appreciate your help.
She's going to ruin your children.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, Loretta. You have you anything? Coffee, tea?
I was just heading out. Tommy had a meltdown in the car. Gave Patrick a fat lip. Class pictures are tomorrow. Might want to ice it again.
Kelly leaves.
Thank you.
Loretta turns to her husband. In the bedroom, Patrick lies in bed. Loretta sits at his bedside holding ice and a cloth against his lip. She stares off into the distance, then looks down at her son. In the kitchen, Loretta sits at the table drinking while her husband does the dishes.
So why haven't you asked me to stay home?
Because I know better.
I'm serious. Why not?
Because you'd be miserable.
Well, so what? Our lives would be easier. Kids would be better off.
Says who?
Your sister. My mother, the neighbor.
What the hell do they know? You'd drive so mad if you were sitting around here all day. It was a great story. Jack's probably just afraid to rock the boat. Don't take it personally.
She smiles. In a residential neighborhood, a woman carries a bag of groceries along a sidewalk. In the street, a black sedan follows her. In the driver's seat is a man in a hat. He watches as the woman makes her way up the steps of a townhouse, then enters the building. One of the upstairs windows of the house is open. The man opens the trunk of his car, then takes out a monkey wrench. In a bathroom, the woman pours a bath, then leaves the room and undresses. In her slip, she puts on a house coat, turns off the water, then leaves. Water drips from the faucet into the bathtub. Gloved hand turns on the water. The woman's head is dunked into the water-filled tub. In her kitchen, Loretta answers the phone.
Hello?
Loretta, it's Phyllis.
Another woman was strangled. Just came over the wire.
Thank you.
Who was that?
They just found a fourth victim.
Go.
You'll get the kids off to school?
Yeah, yeah. Go.
Thank you. Dad's taking you to school today.
Where are you going?
In a kitchen, Jean and a man.
Girls, hurry up! Let's go!
He pours liquor into his coffee.
I saw that.
Wasn't hiding it.
Maybe you should. Hello?
Scotland, I need you on the Strangler story. Jack put some amateur on it.
That bad, huh?
Can you wrap up the nursing home story tonight?
Yeah, all right.
What was that about?
Holland wants me on those Strangler murders.
The hell's the matter with him?
What's that supposed to mean?
He's using you. Putting a girl on a story like that, it's a stunt.
She kisses him.
I need you to get the girls off.
She turns and leaves.
Here, take a seat.
In his office, Jack with Jean, Loretta, and a gray-haired man.
Jean's gonna be working with you on the Strangler story.
Oh, no offense, but I don't need any help with this.
Well, it's not up for debate.
Well, what is she gonna cover that I can't?
The whole story, if you keep it up.
Where are you at with the fourth victim? Did she have a stocking around the neck?
I haven't got confirmation yet.
Not yet. It's 40 minutes to deadline.
Police won't confirm. Her cousin Arnold found the body, but there's no listings for an Arnold Sullivan, and no other relatives have come forward.
Jeannie, call around, see what you come up with.
I already did. Police aren't talking. Corsetti tried, too. Never seen him this tight-lipped about anything.
That's because they're bracing for a shitstorm.
Find the cousin. Otherwise, pull it from page one.
At her desk, Loretta flips through notes. Jean approaches, then drops a stack of phone books on the desk.
What are you doing?
Calling everyone in the phone book with the same last name.
You know how many Sullivans there are?
Better get cracking, then.
Jean flips through a phone book. Loretta grabs one, then begins flipping through it. Jean, then Loretta on the phone.
Hello, I'm looking for a relative of Jane Sullivan.
Hello, is this Mr. Sullivan?
You're not.
Mrs. Sullivan?
No, this is the Howard residence.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Sullivan?
Wrong number.
I'm looking for a relative of Jane Sullivan.
No relation, wrong number.
Thank you.
Who is this?
I'm looking for a relative of Jane. Hello?
Can I speak to Mr. Sullivan, please?
Not interested.
Jane.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Hi, is this Roberta Sullivan?
No, she passed away.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hi, is this Walter?
There's nobody here by that name.
Hi, I'm looking for a relative of, Jane Sullivan.
Hello?
You are. My name is Jean Cole. I'm a reporter with the Record American. We were just calling to confirm some details.
The dark-haired colleague.
They just confirmed number four.
All right. Phantom's going on page one.
Jack turns to the typesetter. A headline reads, Phantom kills four. Outside the police station, McNamara approaches a scrum of reporters.
We are advising the people of Boston to make sure they have proper locks on their doors in good working order.
Is there only one?
And not to allow any person into their home till they are absolutely sure they are a proper person, especially women living alone. Keep your doors locked and don't let strangers in your home.
I'm confirming a story in the Record American. Is there only one killer?
I don't care if it's one killer or four. We're going to catch whoever did this.
Do you have any suspects? Any suspects? Commissioner, do you have any suspects?
Extraordinary methods of investigation are needed to deal with these highly abnormal and uncommon crimes. I believe that the people of Massachusetts have everything to gain and nothing to lose.
We believe this is a man who has come here to kill people. He is a terror to this city. We need to get him into custody.
Along a residential street, a shadowy figure drives a car. In a corridor, a shadowy figure stands before an apartment door.
We're going to be paying here next week. I got to take a look around.
Who sent you?
Super. Only take a minute.
All right.
He dons gloves, then enters. Outside a row of apartment buildings, a large crowd gathers in the street. Loretta makes her way past uniformed officers, then approaches the entrance and flashes her press pass to an officer.
I'm with the Record American.
She enters the building where officers are canvassing the residents.
Oh, ma'am, how are you? I wanted to ask you a few questions. You mind opening the door?
You have ID? How do I know that's real?
Ma'am, I'm a homicide detective with the Boston Police Department.
Yeah, well, I haven't met you, and I'm not letting strangers in.
All right, let's go. Gotta wait outside.
No, I'm with the Red
American. Doesn't
matter.
Let's go.
Loretta steps outside. Jean approaches her.
They're not letting anyone in. Come on.
They enter the building, then approach a detective.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Jeannie, how are you? How's the old man doing?
He's still going. Any word on this? It looking like the others?
Yeah. Left her on the bed. Stockings tied around her neck.
Did it look like he broke in?
No, no sign of forced entry. Looks like he took his time, too.
In the newsroom, a man approaches Jean and Loretta, who type at their desks.
I gotta take pictures for your byline.
Since when do they do that?
Since they got you two.
What does that mean?
What do you think it means? It's circulation stuff.
I'm not doing it.
Come on, why else do you think they got two girls on such a big story?
I don't do stunt reporting. Tell them I'm not doing it.
Tell them yourself. I don't make the rules around here.
The photographer leaves. Loretta lights a cigarette.
You're gonna let that asshole bother you?
You don't mind being called a fluke. By that jackass?
Let him sell the papers. You still got the biggest story in the city.
Jean rises, then sits down in a chair before the photographer.
Five women have been strangled over the past 3 months. By number and by nature, these stranglings are beyond anything ever seen before in the criminal history of the city.
Loretta interviews a man.
The murders are clearly premeditated. All elderly, all lived alone. It's a pattern.
The crimes themselves are insane. He ransacks the apartments, but doesn't take anything. He leaves his victims posed with a bizarre air of ceremony, each left with a decorative garrote around her neck. In every case, there is no evidence left behind. No clue as to how he selects his victims. He seems to come and go as he pleases, committing his crimes in broad daylight.
It's highly organized behavior. Probably escalated over time, and now he's lost control. Barriers are down. He'll almost certainly repeat.
In the newsroom, a woman pushes a mail cart, then sets numerous bundles of mail on Jean and Loretta's desks.
What's this?
This is all for you two.
Jean reads a letter.
I'm one of the many who can't sleep. I find myself awake all night and too frightened to leave during the day. Every day is an eternity. Every night a horror. Nobody knows what a woman alone feels. No one knows fear as we know it.
Loretta types.
There is but one answer. The Boston Phantom.
She X's out the word Phantom.
The Boston Strangler must be caught.
At the police station.
Guess he's got a name now.
Joe hands a newspaper to another detective.
Shit.
At a pub, Loretta and Jean.
Thanks.
They drink.
So, how'd you become Holland's girl? He poached you from one of the other papers?
He got me a job when I graduated high school. I was working at a lunch counter down by the courthouse. He covered a trial the summer before my senior year. I got to know him pretty well, and so he offered to get me a job when I turned 18. Back then, just living through the day was an accomplishment. I wore my school clothes when they first sent me out on assignments. I didn't have money for anything else. Holland took pity on me, lent me money for a new suit. I never wanted to let him down after that. I learned to hold my own, and he started sending me out on bigger and bigger stories, and it just became my life. I really can't imagine doing anything else. It's crazy to think your whole life can turn on a chance encounter.
My senior year, I lined up with all the other girls to register for nursing school. My English teacher, Mrs. Welker, she pulled me out of the line and had me apply for a scholarship to go to college. And that was it. I'd be changing bedpans if it wasn't for her.
Thank God for Mrs. Welker.
In her kitchen, Loretta prepares food. She sets a plate of food on the dining table where guests sit. She answers the phone.
Hello?
Hey, it's Jean.
Hey.
They found another victim. It was a young girl this time.
I'll come in now.
Her husband approaches.
What was that?
Oh, another woman turned up. I've got to go in.
You gotta be kidding me. It's New Year's Eve, for Christ's sakes. Who's going to take your mother home?
I can take her now, I guess.
Go. I'll deal with it.
She kisses him, then leaves. He turns and heads back toward the table. Caption, 1963. In a corridor, Jean and Loretta make their way past detectives and uniformed officers.
There's Joe.
They separate. Jean follows Joe. Loretta continues down the hallway. She enters an apartment. She turns and glances at two milk bottles on a table. She looks up at framed family photos on a wall. The newspaper photographer snaps a photo of her. She flinches. He aims his camera at her again.
That's enough.
Jean and Joe with a tenant.
A guy came to my door earlier today. He said he was here to paint the apartment, so I let him in. All of a sudden, he tells me I'm pretty and asks me if I thought about modeling. I got nervous, told him my husband was home. I pretended to go back and get him. When I came back, he was gone.
What time was this?
This afternoon, 3:00.
You describe him for me?
Normal, white guy, dark hair. He had workman's clothes on. He just looked regular.
In the empty newsroom, Loretta on the phone.
She doesn't fit the pattern. Switch from all elderly women to a young girl is unheard of.
When these guys establish a type, it usually comes from a trauma that's been years in the making. It doesn't just change all of a sudden.
How sure are you?
That's the going theory with this type of killer, but no one really knows.
In the kitchen, Loretta's husband sits at a table reading a newspaper. The article depicts photos of Gene and Loretta. He looks up at Loretta.
Did you know they were going to do this? You really think this is smart? With that lunatic still out there?
I don't know what to say. Stanley was supposed to shoot the damn crime scene.
She answers the phone.
Hello? Hello?
She hangs up. She steadies herself.
Who was that?
It's just the wrong number.
She whirls toward the phone. He rises, then answers it.
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
He hangs up. He turns to her. He answers the phone.
Who is this? Stop calling here.
He leaves the phone off the hook, then glares at her and leaves. In a church, Gene and Loretta watch a memorial service for one of the victims from a distance.
Are you having any problems with people calling your house?
You getting hang-ups and the heavy breathers?
Yeah. They called you too?
Nope. We enlisted our number years ago after I covered my first mayor's race.
Right.
Loretta watches as Joe confers with another detective who then leaves.
I'll be right back.
Loretta follows him out onto a porch.
Hey. Got a smoke?
He gives her a cigarette, then lights it for her.
I'm reading your stories. They've been pretty good.
Oh, have you got any leads? Off the record.
Off the record? More than we can handle.
Were you close to making an arrest?
These people have no idea what they're up against.
What people?
The whole department, as far as I'm concerned.
The whole police department?
The usual rules don't apply. There's no motive. And then he takes off without leaving a shred of evidence. The guy's as careful as he is deranged. Nice talking to you.
He turns to leave.
I'm Jim, by the way.
You can call me at the paper anytime. I'll give you whatever I have.
He leaves. An overhead view of Boston at night. A woman answers the door to an apartment.
Yes?
Yeah, the super sent me to check the radiator. It'll only take a second.
She nods him inside. He enters. She closes the door.
Do you want some coffee?
Yeah, sure.
He sets down a toolbox in the living room. She enters the kitchen, then pours coffee into a mug. She returns to the living room with the mug. He attacks her from behind, then drags her to the floor and chokes her with his bare hands. A residential neighborhood. On a TV, a news reporter.
The city is for some glamorous, stimulating, prosperous. Only recently has it become dangerous. Five young girls have been strangled in the Boston area. A young girl was strangled in her Lawrence apartment, stockings and a leotard wrapped tightly about her neck. 21-year-old Boston University student was found by her two roommates strangled with a silk stocking in her Back Bay apartment. And most recent, Patricia Bassett, a 24-year-old secretary, was also found strangled in her Back Bay apartment, where she lived alone.
In a hospital corridor, Jean approaches a door. A nurse answers.
Jeannie, hi.
You okay?
Tough morning.
You guys do the Patricia Bassett autopsy?
It's a bad one. She's pregnant.
Pregnant? Was she married?
Single.
How far along was she?
A few months.
In an office, Jean approaches a reception desk.
Nielsen's Electronics. One moment.
Mr. Nielsen, please.
He's not in today. Could I give him a message?
Jean Cole with the Record American. Patricia Bassett was his secretary?
That's right.
You know her well?
Pretty well. It's a small office.
Do you know if she was dating anyone?
I'm not sure.
Jean leans toward the receptionist.
Did you know she was pregnant?
The receptionist glances over her shoulder, writes on a notepad, then hands the piece of paper to Jean.
I take lunch at noon.
At a restaurant, Jean sits at a booth. The receptionist enters, sits across the table from her, then hands her a doll.
What's this?
Pull the string on the back.
Please take me with you.
That's Patricia's voice. Mr. Nielsen used her to record the prototype for the latest model.
Please take me with you.
Jesus.
Mr. Nielsen and Patricia were having an affair. Everyone in the office knew.
Did he know she was pregnant?
He was helping her sort it out.
Sort it out? How?
He found a convent in New Hampshire. They were supposed to arrange for an adoption.
Do you know if Patricia wanted to keep the baby?
Maybe. But Mr. Nielsen has a wife and kids. So that was that.
In a living room, Loretta with a 50-ish woman.
Beverly came over every week, no matter what. She'd bring supper and we'd watch the stories on the TV together.
Do you know if she had a boyfriend?
I don't think so. School took up most of her time. And the choir. It's where a lot of her friends were from.
At church?
No, at BU, where she was studying.
That's where I went.
I always thought she'd end up being someone like you. You know, with a job she loved, living on her own terms. I admired that about her. She was doing all the things I wish I could have done with my own life. You have kids?
Yeah, three. Maggie's 9. The boys are 7 and 5.
Beverly was terrified of the dark when she was that age. Only way I could get her to calm down was by singing to her. I'm sorry, I just can't stop thinking about it. What he did to her. What that must have been like for her.
In a church, a choir sings. Loretta sits in a pew. A dark-haired woman sits across from her.
Beverly had just broken up with her boyfriend. She was taking advantage of her freedom.
Did you meet any of the guys she was seeing?
Yeah, but they were all harmless. It's her ex that she was afraid of.
Sorry, who was that?
Daniel Marsh.
Why was she afraid of him?
He was harassing her. He had just gotten kicked out of Harvard, was acting really erratic. He'd call in the middle of the night, show up unannounced, things like that.
When was this?
Right up until around when it happened.
Outside an apartment building at night, Loretta makes her way along the sidewalk. She rounds a corner, then makes her way toward a door on the side of the building. A man with shoulder-length hair looks through a window in the door, then opens it.
Dale Marsh?
Yes.
Loretta McLaughlin with the Record American. You knew Beverly Sammons?
Come inside.
He nods her inside. She enters.
Come in. Come in.
She enters the apartment, then follows him past a naked mannequin.
It's just back here. We can talk just back here.
I've just remembered that I've got another appointment. I'm gonna have to come back another time.
She turns, then leaves. Outside, she runs. In the empty newsroom, Loretta with the doll.
Please take me with
you. Jean approaches.
Please take me with you.
Here's everything on Patricia and Nielsen.
Please take me with you.
You okay?
Yeah.
Don't stay here all night. I'm serious.
I won't.
Please take me with you.
At the police station, Loretta ascends the staircase, then approaches Jim, who sits at a desk on the phone.
Wait, what did you say his name was?
No, you called me.
She tosses documents on his desk.
Running a hotline for the mentally unfit.
That's everything.
All right. Give me some time. I gotta wade through this pile of shit first.
Don't wait on these. They're good leads.
She turns and leaves. In an apartment at night, a man in a suit enters, then closes the door behind him. He turns on a lamp, then opens a dresser drawer. He finds a stack of letters, flips through them, then stuffs them in his pocket. He turns to leave. A spotlight shines on him.
Boston Police Department. Gordon Nielsen?
Yes.
Hands on the wall.
In an interrogation room, Gordon is interviewed.
Your name is Gordon Nielsen?
Yes.
Jim watches through one-way glass.
You've been divorced once?
Yes.
Patricia Bissett worked as your secretary?
Yes.
A polygraph machine.
Did you have a relationship with her outside of work?
Yes.
Did you see Patricia the night she was murdered?
No.
The arms on the polygraph swing from side to side. Outside the police station, Jim approaches Loretta.
Can I have an update, Detective?
We caught Nielsen removing evidence from Patricia's apartment. He failed two polygraph tests, but the DA still doesn't think he has a case, and there's nothing tying him to the other murders.
So what about Daniel Marsh?
You know, the Harvard psycho? He's batshit crazy, I'll give you that, but we got nothing on him.
He was harassing Beverly the week before she was killed.
But you can't charge a guy for getting high and calling his ex-girlfriend in the middle of the night.
Well, so that's it?
I don't think you understand what I'm dealing with here. I'm getting 100 tips a day. I got thousands of sex offenders to screen. Now the commissioner just ordered a raid on every gay bar in the city. I'm doing all I can, but I'm not playing with a full deck. I'll see you later.
In the newsroom.
How many gay bars in Boston are there anyway? There can't be that many.
Way to miss the point, Jack.
The point is, Commissioner McNamara's not up to the job.
What does that mean exactly?
His head's shoved up his ass.
They won't coordinate with other police departments. Connections are being missed, and good leads are falling through the cracks.
Isn't some of that to be expected?
We are way beyond that.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jack. Am I keeping you up?
Will you cut the shit already? What's the story?
The city can't protect its women.
Come on.
What? You don't think it's true or you don't think it's a story?
What the hell is it with you? You can't go after someone's livelihood because you're impatient.
10 women are dead and these assholes don't have a clue.
You don't have a story. You have a grudge.
How many women have to die before it's a story?
That's enough. These are good men busting their asses. I'm not waging a war on the police department.
A man in a suit turns and leaves. Jack follows him. Gina and Loretta turn to one another. In her kitchen, Loretta enters, tosses her coat on a chair, then opens the refrigerator. Her husband enters.
Where you been?
I had to work late.
He hangs up her coat.
Get a plate. You're gonna make a mess.
I'm not gonna make a mess.
He shoves her away from the fridge, then takes the food she was eating and puts it on a plate. He sets the plate on the table.
Sit down. I gotta talk to you anyway.
Look, I've had a long day. Can it wait?
Loretta. Sit down.
She joins him at the table.
I took a new position at work. It's better pay, but I have to be in the Connecticut office part-time.
Part-time?
A few days a week.
How long has this been in the works?
A couple weeks.
And when were you going to tell me about it?
A lot of long days lately. Hasn't exactly been a good time.
How are we supposed to manage with you gone half the week?
You're going to have to do your share.
What more could I possibly do short of quit my job? Is this your way of telling me to stay home?
Come on, Loretta. Have I ever asked you to stay home?
You just do something like this instead. What? I'm free to do what I want as long as it's on your terms. Isn't that right?
You are unbelievable. You know that? My sister is right about you. You're just...
What? Say it. Say it.
Most people would be happy their husband got a promotion.
He rises and leaves. In an office, a man on a phone. Caption, New York City.
Record American.
Yeah, I'm looking for Loretta McLaughlin or Jean Cole.
1 minute, please.
In the newsroom, Loretta answers the phone.
Loretta?
My name's Detective Linsky. I'm with the New York City Police Department. I'm calling about a murder we had down here a couple of weeks ago. Looks like it could be linked to strangling. Older lady. And she turned up dead in the hotel room. Strangled.
The stockings tied around the neck.
People from the hotel saw the guy she was with. A couple of nights later, he shows up at the hotel bar, so I pick him up. Find her cigarette case still in his pocket. Well, it took me 45 minutes to get a confession. His name is Paul Dempsey.
Lives up in Maine, but I can place him in Boston at the time of the first 5 murders.
I'm assuming you went to Boston Homicide with us.
First call I made. Couldn't get anyone to call me back.
Couple of weeks go by, so I make the trip up there myself, figure I'll just tell him in person. Couldn't get anyone to meet with me.
Can you believe that? Detective Joe, 4 hours for homicide I'm working. I'd walk out of my kid's christening for that. I don't know what the hell they're doing up there.
Turns out Paul Dempsey was a suspect in a murder in Maine 4 years before the first strangler murder. The victim was an elderly woman found strangled with her stockings tied around her neck.
It could be the original strangler murder, but no one can get Boston Homicide to look into it.
And this cop in New York will go on the record.
Already did.
We're not running a hit job on the police department.
They're blowing the investigation. How long can we keep ignoring it?
I don't know how many times we have to tell you, but we're not doing it.
I don't know, Eddie.
Jack, Jean, Loretta, and the gray-haired man.
I mean, she's right. We can't keep looking the other way.
You really want to use this paper to tear down the police department?
If anyone else was blowing it this badly, we'd have put it on the front page a long time ago.
All right. You want to run with this? I'm not going to stand in your way. But it's your neck on the block. You understand?
All right.
At her dining room table, Loretta types.
The Boston Police Department is conducting the largest manhunt in the city's history. And yet no trace, no trail, no trip-up has been detected. Without sharing evidence, police may overlook a common denominator, a missing link, a clue that could identify the killer. Unless a centralized effort is set up to catch the Strangler, he will remain today as he did 1 year ago. A faceless, formless, flawless executioner.
Holy shit.
Tomorrow's gonna be interesting.
In the newsroom, Stanley turns to Gina and Loretta as he leaves.
Nice knowing you. It's fun while it lasted.
In the newsroom, Jack hands Loretta a drink, then raises his glass to her.
The Attorney General held a press conference today to announce that he is assuming command of the Boston Strangler investigation after a critical story in the Record American. He has appointed Deputy Attorney General John Bottomley to oversee the investigation.
To suggest that the Boston Police Department is leaving any stone unturned is absurd. And all this because a couple of girl reporters questioned the credentials of our police department. I mean, what the hell do they know about police work?
An exterior view of Loretta's house at night. In a bedroom, Loretta's daughter Maggie lies in bed with a thermometer in her mouth. Loretta removes it, then checks the temperature. She lays the back of her hand on Maggie's forehead. She kisses her on the forehead. She turns to leave, then glances out a window and spots a darkly dressed man standing in the street outside. She turns out the bedroom light. She makes her way slowly back toward the window. The man is gone. She leaves the room, grabs a baseball bat, then descends the stairs. She makes her way slowly across the living room, then looks out a window. She turns and makes her way through the darkened room toward the kitchen. She whirls around, raises the bat, then proceeds back through the living room. As she approaches the front door, Tommy pulls a letter from the mail slot.
What is that?
No, don't touch that!
She grabs it from him.
Go back to bed.
He leaves. She opens the envelope. She removes a pair of lace panties from the envelope. In the newsroom, Loretta looks on as Jean examines a newspaper clipping of their photos. Both of their faces have been crossed out.
Someone came to the house?
We put it in the mail slot. It's just me and the kids home.
You think it was a deranged cop or some deranged asshole?
I'm not exactly pleased about it either way. Where are you going?
Jean makes her way across the newsroom into Jack's office.
Oh, I didn't say anything when you put our pictures in the paper, but you and I both know what that was. That was a stunt. And I know you want to sell your papers, okay, but at what cost? There's more than one lunatic out there, and you're going to get us both killed. Take it out.
Jean returns to her desk.
They're not putting our picture in the paper anymore. I need a drink.
At a pub, Jean and Loretta.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do anymore.
About what?
About everything. You know, it's like I get to do half of everything I really want, and everyone around me still feels shortchanged. James has had enough. I mean, my poor kids are spooked. You know, most of my paycheck goes to the babysitter now.
Who cares? You're going to make yourself crazy worrying about everyone else all the time. You can't be apologetic. Not about the things that are important to you.
How come you're so calm about everything? Now, you've got kids. It must be crazy for you, too.
How'd you keep everything so under control?
My life's a three-ring circus. The wheels have been about to fall off since our youngest was born. So what do you want to do about this story? You sure you want to keep going with this?
At a lunch counter, Loretta and a middle-aged man.
Boston police are keeping us in the dark. They won't talk to any of the other departments. And they sure as hell don't want our help.
Would you go on the record with that?
Yeah. Go ahead, print my name. Print this, too. A couple weeks ago, we got a call about this guy. He was harassing these girls in their apartment. And Boston won't share any information with us. So we just let him go. I come to find out he's one of their prime suspects. We had him. And we just let him walk away.
What was his name?
Off the record. Albert DeSalvo. He's famous over in Cambridge.
Famous for what?
Making himself unwanted.
At a police station, Loretta makes her way down a corridor. Captain, Cambridge Police Headquarters. She hands to-go cups to two officers.
Brian, copy? Guys, copy?
All right, whose file you need?
DeSalvo.
Which one?
Sorry?
All the DeSalvo brothers graduated from jail. Which one you need?
Albert.
Figures.
What, you know him?
Every cop in Cambridge knows him. Al's a world-class creep. Just got nabbed on rape charges over in Malden.
He's in custody?
Yeah, got him up in Bridgewater right now. Have fun.
An officer lays a file on a table, then leaves the records room. Loretta flips through it. Inside is a photo of a dark-haired man. In the parking lot, Loretta with an officer.
DeSalvo had two cons. The Green Man and the Measuring Man. They called him the Green Man because he put on green workman's clothes and posed as the maintenance guy. Say he needed to check something inside their apartments.
And what about the Measuring Man?
I don't know where he came up with this one, but he'd pretend to be a modeling scout. And he convinced these girls to let him in so he could take their measurements. You wouldn't believe how many people let him do it.
A dark-haired woman.
He told me I had a nice figure. He said his agency would hire me. He just needed to take some measurements. But he didn't have a measuring tape. He just used his hands.
DeSalvo wraps his hands around the woman's leg.
I got this horrible feeling. My whole body just froze.
An overhead view of apartment buildings. In the newsroom, Loretta flips through a file. She takes out a document, then reads it. Her eyes widen. She hands the document to Jean.
You remember Sophie's neighbor?
Mm-hmm.
She said a man came to her apartment the day Sophie was killed. At first, he said he was there to paint the apartment, and then he asked her if she ever thought about modeling. Yet the Green Man slipped into the Measuring Man. It's DeSalvo.
Loretta picks up the phone. In a restaurant, Jim joins Loretta at a booth.
I can't be caught dead talking to you right now.
Not bad, huh?
I'm serious. You better call me at the station. You say you're my sister Sally, all right?
She smirks.
What do you have for me?
She slides a file across the table to him. He opens it. Inside is a photo of DeSalvo.
It's not him.
It has to be him. Look, Sophie's neighbor said he came to paint the apartment. But then he slipped up and started talking to her about modeling. Those are the two cons DeSalvo is famous for.
I worked DeSalvo for weeks. I loved him for it. It's not him.
What makes you so sure?
He was in prison for the first six murders. Didn't get out until after Sophie was killed. Whoever was in that lady's apartment wasn't DeSalvo. What you're feeling right now, that's every day for me. You know how many people I've gone down the rabbit hole with? It's a dead end every time with this case. You get your teeth into something and then your bottom falls out at 3 a.m. and you got nothing. Well, I'm making myself crazy.
He lights a cigarette.
He's out there somewhere. Laughing at us.
In her living room, Loretta sits on the couch, drinking. She rises, then sets photos of her three children on a bookshelf. She stares at them. In the newsroom, Jean enters, then sits down at her desk near Loretta, who leans over a document.
You still suck on DeSalvo?
Everything lines up with him. His history, the progression of the crimes, everything.
Except for the part where he was in prison for the first six murders. Have you seen the actual release records?
Loretta's eyes widen. She turns to Jean. She rises and leaves. Jean follows her. In a storage room, a woman takes a box of documents from a shelf, then sets it on a table before Jean and Loretta. Jean and Loretta take files from the box, then flip through documents.
Look at this.
Jean hands a document to Loretta, who reviews it.
Oh, my God.
DeSalvo petitioned the judge for early release. He said he had to get back to his wife and kids. The judge let him out for good behavior.
So he was out in time?
2 months before the first murder.
In the newsroom, Loretta types. Caption 1964.
A 33-year-old father of two is considered a prime suspect in the Boston Strangler case. The suspect is presently confined in a state mental hospital for allegedly assaulting a woman last December.
In the newsroom, Jeff tosses a newspaper on Loretta's desk. The headline reads, DeSalvo hires F. Lee Bailey.
We got beat.
Who the hell is F. Lee Bailey?
A hotshot defense lawyer, one of those press hounds.
How the hell did DeSalvo get a hotshot lawyer?
I don't know. You want me to go do your job for you?
He leaves. In a restaurant, Jim joins Loretta at a booth.
What's on the docket tonight?
I'm writing a story about how Albert DeSalvo got a high-priced defense lawyer. Someone familiar with the investigation care to comment?
No.
So what happened when you went to question him?
Bailey got to him first. Wouldn't let us interview him. So I brought Sophie Glatt's neighbor into ID DeSalvo.
At the Bridgewater State Hospital, DeSalvo and others in a crime lineup, Jim and Sophie's neighbor watch through one-way glass. She points at a burly, dark-haired man. In the restaurant, Jim and Loretta.
She didn't recognize him?
Not only did she not recognize him, she ID'd someone else.
Who?
George Nasser. Murdered a gas station attendant during a robbery. Real piece of work. Schizophrenic with a genius IQ.
And?
It's not him. Been in custody for over a year.
Loretta and others at a press conference.
People can breathe a sigh of relief tonight. The career of the Boston Strangler is over.
How do you know he's telling the truth?
I obtained 5 details only the killer could know. When I quizzed DeSalvo, he went 5 for 5.
Mr. Bailey,
you've done as many interrogations as I have. You develop an ear for bullshit.
And was law enforcement a part of this process?
Bailey turns to Loretta.
That's all I'm going to say right now.
We're still negotiating his confession. If you'll excuse me.
Bailey leaves. An exterior view of the Bridgewater State Hospital. In an interrogation room, DeSalvo and a man in glasses.
This is John Bottomley. The date is February 14th, 1964. Albert, please state your full name.
Albert Henry DeSalvo.
Mr. DeSalvo, we are here today because you intend to confess to all 13 Boston Strangler murders. Is that correct?
Yes.
Tell me about your first victim. How did you pick Anna Slessors?
I didn't pick her in advance. There was a parking spot in front of the house. If there hadn't been a spot, I never would have got her.
Albert, what color robe was she wearing?
Yellow.
In the newsroom, Stanley and Loretta.
Hear about DeSalvo?
No, what?
They sent Bottomley to take his confession last night. Bottomley interviewed him for 5 hours.
And?
No one knows. He hadn't said a word.
Outside the police station, Loretta approaches Jim and Joe.
Can I have a word, please?
I'll catch you up.
Joe leaves.
What's going on with DeSalvo?
Nothing.
If he confessed, why haven't they charged him?
Bailey used you guys to pressure the Attorney General, and then he set one condition for DeSalvo's confession.
Yeah, and what's that?
They're not allowed to use it in court.
They didn't agree to that.
They didn't have a choice after you put DeSalvo on the front page, but they think they can get life on the rape charge.
And they're just going to ignore the fact that 13 women were killed?
That's all they got. And I haven't even told you the punchline yet. You know how Bailey's getting paid? He got DeSalvo a 5-figure book deal. A tell-all from the Boston Strangler. Everyone just wants it to be over.
Her eyes widen. He turns and leaves. In the newsroom, Jack and the typesetter. A headline reads, Strangler terror over. In his office, Jack with Loretta and Jean.
They're washing their hands of it, and that headline you're about to run makes it easy for them.
Come on. The murder stopped. The guy's in jail. What the hell else you want?
They botched the biggest investigation in the city's history, and you're just going to let them sweep it under the rug.
Oh, come on, Loretta. How much trouble are you going to cause me today?
Well, clearly not enough.
Get out of here. Just take the week off.
I'm not taking the week off.
I'm not asking.
The police are washing their hands of it, and you expect us to move on.
Loretta.
We're not doing it.
I took a new assignment.
You've got to be kidding me. Never seen the knife with you people.
Don't get it twisted. If there's another murder, I'll drop everything. But until then, we cover the news. We don't make it.
Loretta nods at Jean, then turns and leaves. In her living room, Beverly's mother with Loretta. She hands Loretta a cup of tea.
The place looks nice.
Sunlight always helps. Been reading your stories. You think they're finally going to charge him?
Oh, yeah. That's what I want to talk to you about. There's going to be a story in the papers tomorrow. They're not going to charge Albert with Beverly's murder. Or any of the murders, for that matter.
I don't understand if he confessed.
They made a deal with his lawyer, and they can't use his confession in court. But they have him on other charges, and they're going to make sure that he never gets out of prison.
But what about my daughter? It's not right to just give up on her like this. How can they do that?
Loretta lowers her eyes, then shakes her head. In her kitchen, Loretta makes her way into the living room where her husband, James, sits on the couch, watching TV.
Let me warn you not to breathe a word to anyone except your chief. My life will depend upon your decision.
Hey, the kid's asleep?
Yeah.
He turns back to the TV. She leaves.
Military and political documents of utmost value to your government. I'm prepared to sell.
Upstairs, Loretta enters Maggie's bedroom. She crouches and picks a notebook up off the floor. She opens it. Inside are newspaper clippings depicting her and Jean. She climbs into bed with Maggie, then cuddles her and kisses her on the back of the head. An exterior view of a brick building at night. Caption, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 1965. In a car parked outside sits a plainclothes detective.
We have a possible intruder at Oak Tower Apartments.
He picks up his radio.
61, got it.
He drives off. In an apartment building corridor, the detective and another man approach the door to an apartment. With his revolver raised, the detective enters the apartment, then steps through the dimly lit rooms. He enters a bedroom. Lying on a bed is the body of a young woman with stockings tied and a bow around her neck. In the newsroom, Loretta answers the phone.
Yes?
Loretta McLaughlin.
Speaking, who's this?
Detective DeLine, Michigan State Police. I don't know if you're aware, but we had six women strangled near Ann Arbor.
When was this?
We found the sixth victim last night.
You said they were strangled. Anything else in common?
All the crime scenes were damn near identical to the Boston Strangler. I've read your stories. I think it's safe to say that you're an expert on the case. So I wanted to ask you, do you still think that Albert DeSalvo is the guy?
In her bedroom, Loretta packs a suitcase. James enters.
What are you doing? What do you think you're going to find out there?
She turns to him, then continues packing.
When is this going to stop, Loretta? When are you going to let this go?
She continues packing.
Be careful, will you?
He turns and leaves. A view from a vehicle of a tree-lined road along a lakeshore. A sign reads, Enter Michigan. In a sedan, Loretta pulls into the parking lot of a police station. Inside, DeLine pours Loretta a cup of coffee, then sits with her at a desk.
Thanks. So, have you got any suspects?
If I did, I wouldn't be telling a reporter.
Off the record?
Off the record, I wouldn't be telling a reporter. You could have saved a lot of trouble if you just called first.
Well, how about the case files? Mind if I take a look?
How many cops let you look at open case files?
Not many.
He taps his fingers on the desk, then rises and leaves. He approaches a file cabinet, opens it, then returns with a file. He sets it on the desk before her.
You got 20 minutes.
He leaves. She opens a file folder, then flips through the photos in it. The first is a close-up of a stocking tied in a bow around a woman's neck. The second depicts a woman in her bra and panties, lying on a bed with a stocking tied around her neck. Loretta lights a cigarette. The third is another photo of the victim. In a parking lot at night, Loretta sits in her car, flipping through newspapers. A headline reads, "Tenants strike for lower rent, better conditions." Beneath it is a photo of protesters. One of them is Daniel Marsh. In his office, DeLine on the phone at his desk. Loretta enters, then lays a newspaper before him.
Well, I do appreciate that. Yeah. I'm going to have to call you back.
Daniel Marsh's ex-girlfriend was killed by the Boston Strangler. He was my favorite suspect for her murder, and he's here in Ann Arbor.
Why don't you have a seat? Off the record. He's our prime suspect right now. You're the second person from Boston to report him.
Are you going to charge him?
We don't have enough yet.
Why didn't you say something earlier?
Because we're not having this conversation.
Who was the other person who reported him?
The medical director from Bridgewater.
Dr. Roby, please.
Hold, please.
Loretta on the phone.
Hello.
Loretta McLaughlin with the Record American.
What can I do for you?
Why did you report Daniel Marsh to the Michigan State Police?
I'm sorry, I can't discuss one of my patients.
He was a patient of yours.
Yes.
At Bridgewater.
Well, yes, that's where my patients are. Is there anything else I can help you with?
No. Thank you.
She makes another call.
Hello?
I need you to call in a favor.
I thought you weren't speaking to me.
I'm not.
All right, what?
In a corridor, Jean approaches a uniformed officer at a reception desk.
I'm Jean Cole. Deb McNulty's expecting me.
In the records room.
Be quick. I don't want to get fired tonight.
A woman hands Jean a file folder, then leaves. Jean examines a document and makes notes. At night, Jean at a payphone.
He was arrested for assaulting his girlfriend. Dr. Roby evaluated him at Bridgewater and had him committed.
Did he overlap with DeSalvo?
They were in there together for 3 months, in the same ward.
Outside a house, DeLine and other officers.
Daniel Marsh! We knew you were in there! Come out with your hands up!
Inside the house, Daniel answers the door. With his hands raised, he steps out onto the porch. Two officers grab his wrists, then handcuff him. An exterior view of the Ann Arbor police station. In an interrogation room, DeLine and Daniel sit across a table from one another. DeLine pushes a pen and notepad across the table to him.
All right, Daniel, just write down where you were on each of these days.
Daniel pushes the pen and pad away.
Just answer the question, Daniel. Where were you when these women were murdered?
I was going to school in Boston. You know that.
What about Bridgewater? You ever spend any time with Albert DeSalvo?
Are you charging me?
Just answer the fucking question, Daniel.
If you are not charging me, I want to leave.
You want to leave? There's a dozen reporters out there that just got tipped off. Go ahead.
If they put my name in the paper, I'll just start over somewhere else.
Outside the police station, Loretta and other reporters look on as Daniel emerges from the building. His and Loretta's eyes meet. A detective opens a car door for him. Loretta follows them with her eyes. In In the newsroom, Loretta on the phone.
Homicide.
Detective Connolly, please. It's his sister, Sally.
Loretta, he quit. Try him at home.
She hangs up. On a movie set, actors portray DeSalvo and a police officer.
You killed all of them. All 13. Admit it. Admit it!
I did.
Cut!
On set, a gray-haired man turns to Jim.
So what do you think?
Well, he's got to lay into him a little more. It's pretty close.
Detective Conley, your sister Sally's here.
Jim looks over his shoulder at Loretta, who stands nearby. Jim and Loretta.
Cashing in, huh?
Oh, why don't you save it? You've been cashing in since the beginning.
Oh, that's pretty damn cynical, even for you.
So what do you want?
I just got back from Michigan.
I heard.
You don't care to know?
No, I don't.
I need DeSalvo's confession.
You gotta go see Bottomley for that.
I know you made a copy.
How do you know that?
Oh, come on. I bet you stayed up every night listening to those tapes. If we were right about DeSalvo, what are you so afraid of?
Go home. Spend some time with your kids.
How do you just stop caring after all this?
When you realize you could give up your whole life for it and no one would give a shit. Go home.
He turns and leaves. In the newsroom, Loretta enters, then approaches her desk. On it is a thick envelope with the words, "To my sister Sally," written on it. Inside the envelope are reel-to-reel tapes. In the newsroom, Loretta puts one of the tapes on a reel-to-reel machine.
This is John Bottomley. The date is February 14, 1964. Albert, please state your full name.
Albert Henry DeSalvo.
Mr. DeSalvo, tell me about your first victim. How did you pick Anna Slessors?
I didn't pick her in advance. There was a parking spot in front of the house. Makes you think about what goes into this kind of selection.
Why is this girl home and that one's not? What is it? Is it fate?
Loretta puts another tape on the machine.
Okay, Albert, I'd like to ask you about her clothing. Can you tell me what color robe she was wearing?
Carrying two to-go cups, Jean approaches, then sits down beside her.
Aren't you on a new story?
Get over yourself. Let me listen.
Loretta hands a pair of headphones to Jean, who puts them on.
Albert, what color robe was she wearing?
Yellow. Or maybe it was red.
You sure?
No. It was blue.
That's right. Let's move on. So when you entered the apartment, can you tell me what you saw?
Well, the kitchen was on the left.
It was on the left?
Maybe...
Well, here.
That's right. The kitchen was on the right, and the bedroom was down that hall.
That hall?
Down that hall.
Loretta takes off the headphones, then hands them to Jean.
Bottomley just showed him the crime scene photo.
Jean puts them on.
Maybe...
What? Well, here.
That's right. The kitchen was on the right, and the bedroom was down that hall.
That hall?
Down that hall.
Any lawyer worth a dime would pick this apart.
In a residential neighborhood, Loretta approaches a man in a pickup truck. Nearby, other men load a truck.
Excuse me, I'm looking for Richard DeSalvo.
Back there. Look, Al's not talking to reporters anymore.
Al's had it tough.
Whatever my brother did, he never meant to harm nobody. He loves his family. Always been good to them.
Look, I know there's more to his story. But there's nothing I can do if he won't talk to me.
I'm floated by him. But I'm not making any promises.
In the newsroom, a blonde woman answers the phone.
Record American.
Yeah, this is Albert DeSalvo. Is Loretta there?
1 minute, please.
The woman rises, then approaches Loretta, who types at her desk.
Albert DeSalvo's online, too.
Loretta picks up the phone.
This is Loretta.
Hi, Loretta. It's Albert. You know, my brother
said you'd come to see him. I told him that I knew you from the papers. It's funny, I always said you girls knew more than the police.
Why don't I come down there so we can talk in person?
Thing is,
I'm not giving my story away for free anymore. I really screwed over on that book deal.
I listened to your confession, Albert, and,
I think there's more to your story.
Well, like I said, I'm not talking to reporters anymore.
Don't you want people to know the truth?
I don't give a damn about that.
I've got a family to support. I don't think you understand how screwed over I got.
Well, what are you holding out for, Albert? If everybody already screwed you over, then what have you got left to lose?
Why would you let them get away with it?
In a phone booth at the state hospital, DeSalvo lowers the receiver for a moment, then brings it back to his ear.
Come here tomorrow at visiting hours.
He ends the call. A short-haired inmate watches him. In a hospital corridor, the short-haired prisoner produces a knife as he follows DeSalvo. DeSalvo enters a room. The short-haired inmate follows him inside, then stabs him repeatedly. DeSalvo crumples to the floor. The inmate tosses the knife on the floor, then leaves. In her bedroom, Loretta lies in bed. She answers the phone.
Hello?
Hey, it's Jack. A report just came over the wire. DeSalvo was killed in his cell. I'm sorry, kid.
Outside the state hospital, Loretta approaches the building. In a corridor inside, Stanley approaches her.
You got anything?
No official statement yet. My guys at the Herald said he got killed over drugs.
It doesn't make any sense.
A woman approaches Loretta, then hands her a note.
He was in there with them. He knew what they were up to.
The woman leaves. The note reads, Harrison, 426 Columbia Road. In the newsroom, Jean answers the phone.
Hello?
I need you to take down an address. If I don't call back in an hour, I'll give it to the police.
What the hell are you doing?
426 Columbia Road. Got it?
Got it. Loretta.
In a phone booth, Loretta hangs up.
Shit.
Outside a house, Loretta. An elderly man glances through a window in the door, then answers it.
I'm looking for Harrison.
He's down at the end of the hall.
Loretta makes her way down a long corridor. She approaches the door. A thin man answers the door.
Harrison?
Yeah?
I'm a reporter with the Record American. I want to ask you some questions about Bridgewater.
In a living room, Loretta sits with Harrison, who holds a cup of coffee.
Me and DeSalvo were in the same ward. I saw him every day.
And what about him?
She shows him a photo of Daniel.
Yeah. He was in my ward, too. They were always together.
Martian DeSalvo.
And Nasser.
George Nasser?
A flashback. Sophie's roommate points at Nasser in the crime lineup. Loretta and Harrison.
You know, the three of them were always working on DeSalvo's confession.
What do you mean, working on?
They coached him. They were at it every day for weeks. They had a stack of newspaper clippings, and they would quiz DeSalvo about the details. I remember Marsh saying, you gotta get it so deep in your brain that you believe it yourself.
But what did they care if DeSalvo confessed?
Reward money. That's why Nasser got his lawyer involved.
I'm not shitting you. This woman would confess the whole thing.
Nasser on the phone.
His lawyer organized the whole thing.
You mean F. Lee Bailey?
That's right. He told Albert that he could get him a book deal, make him rich and famous.
A flashback. Bailey at the press conference.
Albert thought he was going to make $1 million off it and support his family.
Her eyes widen. In a prison, Loretta follows a guard up a set of stairs, then enters a visiting room. Inside, she approaches Nasser, who sits at a table. She sits down across from him. She opens her purse, then takes out a notepad.
You got a smoke?
She hands him a cigarette, then lights it for him.
So you want to know about Albert?
How did you know each other?
We were cellmates.
Before he confessed?
Yeah, for a couple months.
It's an awfully strange coincidence, don't you think? You're the one who gets picked out of a lineup, and you just happen to be DeSalvo's cellmate.
Maybe I just got one of those faces.
Were you in Sophie Clark's building the day she was killed?
No. I don't kill women. And I got no reason to lie about that now. Doing a life sentence.
Then why did you coach DeSalvo?
I wouldn't exactly call it that. I was just helping him remember. 13 murders, that's a lot to keep straight.
Why were you helping him?
Reward money. 10 grand a victim.
So the more murders he confessed to, the more money you'd make. Well, might as well take credit for all of them, make a little extra money.
It was a lot of extra money. And regardless of what you think, Albert convinced me he killed those women. Was it all 13? What does it really matter? So you all created a myth, and it needed to be stopped. People wanted to believe it was Albert. They needed to believe that it was Albert. The alternative was just too disturbing.
What's that?
There are many Albert DeSalvos out there. Your safe little world is just delusion. Men kill women. Didn't stop with Albert. Sure as hell isn't end with him either.
In her living room, Loretta sits before a pile of newspaper clippings and photos on a table. She sips from a glass of whiskey. In his office, Jack with Loretta.
If Dr. Grayson was right about these killers having a type, the first five murders were all elderly women. And if Paul Dempsey had a type,
it was elderly women.
DeSalvo was a pathological liar. Everything he knew about the first five murders had either been in the papers or it was given to him by Bottomley. But of the hundreds of women DeSalvo assaulted, all his victims were young. And then Paul Dempsey moves on to New York and the Strangler starts killing younger women. Then other men used the Strangler as cover to get rid of women they didn't want around anymore. The boss who got his secretary pregnant, the psychotic ex-boyfriend.
At a table at the state hospital, DeSalvo, Nasser, and Daniel.
Then DeSalvo ends up at Bridgewater with Nasser and Marsh. They use DeSalvo. Nasser gets F. Lee Bailey involved so he can claim the reward money. And they coached DeSalvo before he confessed. He just became a convenient way out for everybody else. The entire city just wanted to move on.
A headline reads, Strangler Terror Over. Loretta in her living room.
Nobody bothered to get to the truth.
Outside a house, DeLine sits in a car and watches as a station wagon pulls out of the driveway, then drives along a tree-lined road.
And people got away with murder.
In the newsroom, Loretta sits at her desk, typing. She pulls the paper from her typewriter, rises, then makes her way across the room. She hands it to Jack. He reads it. Before the typesetter is the headline, Boston Stranglers.
It's nice work, kid.
He raises his coffee mug to her. She raises her whiskey glass. They drink. A newspaper press. The headline reads, Boston Stranglers. Outside the police station, a scrum of reporters approaches McNamara as he steps from a vehicle.
Commissioner, what is your response to the story in the Record American today? Commissioner, what is your response?
All the Strangler murders are still open cases. I'll leave it at that.
He turns and leaves. Outside her house at night, Loretta pulls up in her car. She turns toward the front window, then sees the light from the TV flickering in the living room inside. She drives off. In the living room, James sits on the couch, watching TV. He turns toward the sound of the departing vehicle, then back toward the TV. In a pub, Loretta enters. She notices Jean sitting at the bar, drinking, then joins her. A bartender sets a drink before Loretta. She and Jean raise their glasses to one another, then drink. They turn toward one another. Loretta smiles, then looks away thoughtfully. A byline photo of Loretta McLaughlin. Caption, Loretta went on to become an award-winning medical reporter at the Boston Globe. She was among the first journalists to cover the AIDS crisis. Loretta and James separated and later divorced. A photo of Jean Cole. Caption, Jean continued to work as an investigative reporter for the next 30 years. She and Loretta remained close friends. newspaper article depicts a photo of Gene and Loretta. The headline reads, Girl Strangler Series Draws Respect. Caption, Daniel Marsh was never charged with any of the murders. George Nassar is still in prison in Massachusetts. He never received any of the reward money. A photo of Albert DeSalvo. Caption, in 2013, Albert DeSalvo was linked to the 13th murder through DNA evidence. The other 12 murders remain unsolved. Credits. Audio description by Descriptive Video Works. Written by Joel Beacon, narrated by Diane Newman.